Gavin, I think this is your voicemail. This is Ryan Paces giving you a call back. If you can give me a call back real quick, I just wanted to make something clear. And if I'm on a voicemail, I'll make this even more clear. Patterson, dude, was not Amanda's pimp. She didn't have a pimp. She wasn't some Niagara Falls prostitute or Buffalo prostitute walking around the streets. That wasn't her. It's not what she did. Adam Patterson was a driver. She had a vehicle that Amanda did not have at the time. That's all he was. Literally all he was. Amanda used him. I just wanted to let you know that. Give me a call if you want. But just let it be known on this thing, Amanda was not some fucking prostitute walking around with Adam as a pimp. He was no pimp. He was a pawn. He was a punk. He was a vehicle. That's all he ever was. Just letting it be known. Thanks, buddy.
Welcome back to Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin. I'm Gavin Fish. In today's episode, we're continuing Treated Like Trash, our investigation into the killing of 20-year-old Amanda Winkowski. Now, what you just heard was a voicemail from Ryan Paces. Ryan was Amanda's boyfriend at the time she died. They'd been together a long time. He was in jail on a parole violation when Amanda went missing and when her body was later found. It shouldn't matter if Amanda was a drug addict and a prostitute or not. I mean, it shouldn't matter to the case. Every victim's death should be investigated. But I understand why Ryan would want to make it very clear that he doesn't believe the narrative that was put forward by Adam Patterson since the very beginning. That Amanda was a useless, junky prostitute. Ryan knew her, and he loved her. And it hurts to have people saying that about someone you love. In our previous episode, we went over the basic facts of this case. Well, really, we went over the beginning of the basic facts of the case. If this is the first time you're joining us, we suggest you go back to our first episode in the series. On YouTube, it's video number 12. We'll link to it in the description. And there's also a playlist you can look at, too. If you're a podcast listener, look for episode number 9. We're doing our best to keep things organized, but we currently have 5 cases we're investigating. We post shorter episodes to YouTube, so YouTube and the podcast don't match up. So with that out of the way, our plan today is to dig into the subject of today's episode, which is December 5th, 2008. That's the day Amanda went missing. We invite you to stick around. This is Solve Crimes. Before we go too far, Rick, I know that we've gotten a lot of questions and comments on the YouTube video and on our website. So maybe we ought to do a little viewer mail and answer some of the questions that we've gotten. Does that sound good?
Yeah. And it's not just a little. It's quite a bit. This case, as you and I both know, and you especially, is so deep and wide and vast and complicated, and
it's
really caught a lot of attention. And so we've received throughout social media and our website and the YouTube channel, we've received a lot of questions, really good ones. So we've kind of narrowed it down to what, four or five for this segment?
Yeah. So what are those questions that people are dying to know the answer to?
So the first one is that there were rumors, and some of these rumors and these comments are coming from people who live in Buffalo. So they know this story, right?
Right, right.
And since it goes back 11 years, they've heard things that, you know, maybe aren't swirling around right at this moment. But these are pretty big ones because for a while there, we weren't sure. So these questions were our questions at one point.
Yeah.
So one of them was Amanda's hair cut?
Yeah, now that's a good question. And that the answer to that question seems to go back to a report pretty close to the time that Amanda was found. And I think kind of what happened, remember when we were kids and you play telephone, right? You'd whisper in somebody's ear.
Oh, yeah.
And then that. So I think they've just gotten embellished over time. So according to the coroner, not the coroner's report, the ME's report, And according to the photos that we've seen of the autopsy, Amanda's hair was not cut. It's possible because she was frozen that some of her hair broke, but it was not cut off.
The way the rumors were said or written about, it made it sound like it was some statement. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like somebody chopped her hair off violently, you know? And it's kind of funny to me because the hair thing and the next question as well, it's almost like somebody was trying to make it even more horrific than it already was. And I don't think that's possible. It's certainly not necessary. You know,
it's definitely not necessary. And I think that other question you're talking about was Amanda's tongue cut or cut off or bit off?
It right? sounded like they were trying to say that it was cut out, because we do know that she was an informant. And if it was cut out, that would be a whole different ball game. But as you saw and verified, it was not.
Yeah. And there is a problem with those kinds of rumors going around because it doesn't help the case, because people like us who are looking closely into the case, we get sidetracked by stuff like that. We go down the rabbit hole of, oh, she was an informant and these drug dealers are trying to make a statement that she's a rat. Right. So just to answer it directly, Amanda's tongue was not cut out.
No.
Her tongue was not bit off. There were bite marks on her tongue and there was blood. And to me, Rick, that's probably a result of just the violent way in which she was strangled to death.
But, you know, if it was something that happened during violent sex, it could also have been the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
yeah, I guess so.
Throwing that out there.
Yeah. What's the third question?
We have got, let's see here. We do know that she was found in the garbage tote naked. And so some people were asking if her clothes had ever been found, like were they in the garbage can or elsewhere?
Yeah. Amanda's clothes were never found. We know what she was wearing because Adam Patterson reported what it was that she was wearing that day. Mm-hmm. But no, those clothes were never found. What were found on her were a necklace around her neck. It was like a crucifix, and it was around her neck with the cross behind her. She had a navel ring, and she had three like stud type earrings in one ear and two in another. And those are the only, you know, they're not really clothing items. They're embellishments, right? Jewelry.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that answers that one. And then there were some questions about where the garbage can came from.
Yeah. So the garbage can, Antoine Garner lived with his grandmother at 157 Spring Street, and the garbage can belonged to their neighbor at 159 Spring Street,
which is
right next door. Right. So yeah, if you're looking at Antoine's house, it's the house right to the left, right next door. They kind of share a driveway. These are row houses, right? They're townhouses.
And it was, as we read through some witness statements and testimonials and stuff like that, we did find out that it was reported missing almost right away, like within a couple of days, right?
Yeah. So on the 7th of December, which is 2 days after Amanda went missing, police officers met with Leslie at Antoine's house, and they did a search of Antoine's house. Sometime when they were outside, either before or after, the police officers asked the neighbor if she had noticed anything strange. And she said, well, my garbage can's been missing, you know. And they asked her if she had reported it to the city of Buffalo, and she said that she had. Later on, so that was in a police report that officer made to his superior. Later on, she was brought in for questioning after Amanda was found on January 9th. And in her statement, she repeated that. But she told it like the story of, you know, the cops asked me about this and I told them, you know, that it was missing. So sometime before December 7th.
So it makes it interesting to me that, you know, eventually, in case some people that are watching didn't know, eventually the garbage can that she was found in is that garbage can. And it was basically across the street from Antoine Garner's home. So for 5 weeks, I wonder where that garbage can was, because they searched his house and didn't find it.
Yeah. And like, these are row houses, and they have like a shed behind each house. So all of the walls are shared, right? It's probably six or seven different houses in one building.
And maybe while we're doing this on the video on our YouTube channel, you'll show the aerial view.
Yeah, I can show that view. So each house has like a shed attached to the back of the house. Mm-hmm. And I think garbage cans probably could fit in there, but that garbage can was gone. It was not anywhere to be seen. She couldn't find it.
Yeah.
And then it showed up 5 weeks later.
Right.
Yeah.
Such a crazy case, Gavin.
Thank you, everybody, for all those questions. If you have any more as you're watching this video series on Amanda Winkowski, please drop those questions in the comment section on YouTube, or you can go to our website, which is solvecrimeswithrickandgavin.com, and you could submit your questions there. Okay, the day is December 5th, 2008. According to two interviews that the New York State Police did with Adam Patterson, one on December 9th and the other on the 11th, at about 5 p.m., Adam arrived at his home to find out that Amanda had made plans to meet a guy in Buffalo. He said he thought the guy's name was Justice, and remember, Justice is a name Antoine Garner went by. She asked him for a ride, but he said no. Let's pause for a moment and talk about Adam and Amanda's living arrangement.
It was a convenience thing, and we had known Adam, so I didn't think too much of it because it was only going to be short-lived, maybe 4 to 6 weeks, and then Amanda was going to move in with her sister, Carol Lee. Her sister lived in Las Vegas, and she was moving home. So it was really short-lived, like a short period with Adam. She had school right down the street from Adam. That's where she was starting college in January. And then she also worked at Cocktail Bob's, was another 10 minutes down the other way. So it was really a convenience thing until her sister moved home and moved in that area.
My mom moved out to... She remarried, and she moved out of her house where Amanda had lived. And Amanda wanted to stay in the area. She was going to end trip. And my oldest sister lived in Vegas, and she was moving back. So Amanda knew in January that Carolee would be back, and they were planning on getting an apartment together. But... or a house, or moving in with Carolee, something like that. She was going to move in with Carolee. But she wanted to stay in Niagara County for school and work and everything until that. So there was like a few month interval until Carolee moved back from Vegas.
The first voice you just heard was Leslie Brill Meserol, Amanda's mom. The second was Amanda's sister, Danielle. The school that Danielle called N-Trip is actually NCCC, Niagara County Community College. Amanda had just enrolled in school, and she was trying to decide what to study. She wanted to either go into nursing like her older sister, Carolee, or into law enforcement. So living with Adam was a solution to a short-term problem. She just needed a place to stay for a few weeks until Carolee moved back from Las Vegas. And Adam confirms this, sort of, in his written statement to New York State Police in an interview that he did on December 9th.
She needed a place to stay because her mother was moving to Tonawanda. She didn't want to move to Tonawanda because she wanted to stay close to her sister, Danielle. I told her that she could stay with me, but I wish I never did. Her staying with me has caused all sorts of problems. Amanda had been living with me since the beginning of November. She eventually moved in 2 truckloads of her stuff.
There's something I want to unpack in this statement, and I know it's kind of a tangent, but it's important. Adam made this statement on December 9th. He was already talking about her in the past tense. Amanda had been living with me rather than Amanda has been living with me. And I don't think I'm being paranoid here, because in the second sentence of his first written statement, again to the New York State Police, Adam wrote, "She was bartending there, talking about a bar called Cocktail Bob's. But then he crossed out the word was and the ing off of bartending, and that changed the sentence to read, she is a bartender there. If you're listening on the podcast, you can see an image of this on Amanda's case page on our website, solvecrimeswithrickandgavin.com. So why was Adam speaking about Amanda in the past tense on December 9th? Well, let's talk about how Adam said he met Amanda. In his December 9th interview, he says he'd only known Amanda for about 2 months and that they met at Cocktail Bob's. But on December 11th, he changed his story. In that interview, he said he'd met her the previous September when he claims he picked her up to pay her for sexual favors. From what I can tell, this is the beginning of the narrative that Ryan was talking about in the opening of this episode. Adam claimed Amanda was a prostitute. But is that how he met her?
My ex-husband went to school with Adam Patterson. She met him at my house.
I honestly don't know exactly when they met, but Adam came to our house. Like, he used to come to our house when we lived on Whitmer Road, my parents' house, because John Medzinski, which is Mercedes and Alyssa, our two younger sisters' father, my mom's ex-husband of 15 years, grew up with him in Niagara Wheatfield. They went to school together. They got in some trouble after they went when John got out of the Marines or the Navy, whatever he was in, and actually got arrested together. And they continue to smoke weed. So I know that they used to, like, you know what I mean, smoke together or get their stuff together. Like, he was still around. Like, we seen him on multiple occasions at the house, like, just meeting John in the driveway and, like, taking off or whatever.
Okay, so let's get back to where we were. It's December 5th. It's 5 p.m. Adam just arrived back home, and he says that Amanda asked him to give her a ride to Buffalo. And at first, he declines, which I guess is understandable because where they were living, Justice's house was about 30 to 40 minutes away, depending on traffic and a couple other things. And then Amanda told Adam not to worry about it. She'd ask her sister for a ride. But, Adam said, he then changed his mind because Amanda and Danielle tended to get heroin together. He didn't want her to do that, apparently. How very paternal. So Adam drives Amanda to Justice's house. And this is according to his statement. His story goes like this, word for word.
She told me how to get to his house. We took the I-180 to Clinton and Clinton to Spring Street. The house number was 157. She walked to the door, and when it opened, she went inside. I drove off. She was supposed to call me when she was ready. She left her purse in my truck because she said she'd be right out. This was about 6 p.m. She texted me saying that she needed more time. Then she texted me again saying that she would call in an hour. When she did call, she said pick me up at 7:35. I had already gotten a slice of pizza on Clinton Street, sat in a few parking lots, and then bought some lottery tickets at a gas station. I think it was NOCO. I bought a $2 scratch-off and a Mega Million ticket. Then I tried to call her. The phone was off. I think I left her a message, but can't be sure. I had been waiting outside the house since 7:30 p.m., and after about an hour, I decided to leave. It was about 8:30 p.m. when I headed home.
Rick, does anything stand out to you about Adam's statement?
Yeah. Well, there are a few things. You know, with people that are kind of sketchy, I guess I'll say, you're just never sure if they're just trying to cover their own butt, so to speak. Right. So everything he says, we've had to take with a grain of salt. And one of them that stuck out was that if he just pulled up and dropped her off, if she left her purse in the car because she was just going to be a minute, why did he leave?
Yeah, if it was just going to be I'm in and out,
right?
Why leave?
Right. So that's clearly, you know, raises an eyebrow,
right?
You know, so is there a way? I mean, one of the things that we've been doing on this constantly is cross-checking, and there's so many documents to look at. Can we verify what he stated by going through like the phone records and see what if they match up to his timeline?
That's a good idea. Let's take a look at the phone records. We're looking for Adam's and Amanda's phones on December 5th, 2008, between, let's say, 1 o'clock and 8:30 that night. So this is a spreadsheet I put together after looking at all the phone records, as well as notes from Buffalo Police Detective Mary Evans. First off, Adam and Amanda were texting and calling each other all afternoon. Between 1:59 p.m. and 4:58 p.m., they texted or called each other 14 times. So I find it hard to believe that Adam came home at 5 o'clock and just found out, out of the blue, that Amanda had made plans to meet someone. They were talking all day, up until 2 minutes before 5. The next suspicious thing I see is a text from Adam to Amanda at 5:42 p.m. Now, if they were driving together trying to get to Antoine's house by 6 p.m., they would have left their house no later than 5:30 p.m. And it's actually a little more likely that they left earlier than that, right? So why did Adam text Amanda if they were driving together in the same car? Well, the most obvious answer to that question is they weren't in the same car. The next thing we see are 2 8-second calls from Amanda to Adam, one at 6:07 p.m. and one at 6:10 p.m. In his statement, Adam said that he received 2 text messages from Amanda saying that she needed more time. So there's a little inconsistency here, but I guess I'm okay with him remembering it as 2 texts instead of 2 8-second calls. But what's important, I think, here is that Adam establishes that by 6:07 p.m., Amanda was inside Antoine's house. Okay, then we see that Adam called Amanda 3 times, 6:38, 6:42, and 6:46. This seems completely consistent with his statement. Adam then receives a call from Amanda's phone at 6:51 p.m. This is likely the call that Adam references when he says she told him to pick her up at 7:35. Adam then calls her at 6:53 p.m., which she didn't pick up, and again at 7:46 p.m. She didn't pick that one up either. And that's the last call that either of them made to each other for the rest of the night. So the phone evidence suggests to me that Adam was telling the truth about some things. And I'm not saying that he was, just that the evidence suggests that he was about some things. That one thing really bothers me, though. They weren't even in the same place at 5:42 p.m. I mean, in Adam's scenario, he was driving his truck and Amanda was in the passenger seat right next to him, right? Why would he text her? Do you remember phones in 2008? They weren't really text friendly, were they? iPhones were out, but they were very expensive, and most people in Amanda's circle were still using flip phones. Hers was an LG Chocolate. Rick, what do you think?
I mean, again, we're dealing with something that happened 11 years ago, and we're for our purposes, we're going over this stuff it's with fresh eyes, which is kind of the whole point. So we're finding things that are raising questions and finding other things that kind of corroborate some things.
Right.
But things like the phone records and call records, I mean, I'm not sure how long, if you know, how long after her body was found that they interviewed Adam, because we both discussed at one point that we kind of questioned whether or not he basically concocted a story that fit the timeline that the police had.
Okay, so the timeline for their interviews with Adam, and this was the New York State Police, this wasn't the Buffalo PD, this was the New York State Police before the case kind of got handed over to BPD.
Okay.
They interviewed Adam on December 9th, which is...
the day she was found.
No, it's a month before she was found.
That's right.
Yeah,
okay,
so it's like 4 days after she went missing.
Yeah.
And then again on December 11th. And on the December 11th one, it seems like Adam came in voluntarily and said, you know what, I lied about, you know, one thing, so I want to clear the record up.
Man, I can't put my finger on this guy. You know?
No. Well, you know, in his statement, Adam kind of portrays himself as pure as the wind-driven snow, and Amanda brought all of this chaos and ugliness into his life, right? This was not the case by any stretch of the imagination, according to so many people who knew him.
Well, and DNA, you know, DNA
puts,
as well, right?
Yeah, puts Adam's DNA, specifically semen, was found inside of Amanda's mouth.
Right. We don't know when it got there, but...
Yeah, but that's something we ought to talk with Matt about, you know, try to figure out. Because, you know, your mouth, you've got all these enzymes that are breaking things down.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
And yet, in the DNA report, that DNA is the strongest DNA that they got from all of the samples.
See, so it seems that's like... That's what I question, is that it's that sounds like it was fresh and that it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, Adam's a... Adam's a question mark.
Right.
And he's not as innocent as he kind of lets police on to be.
And what's odd for us anyway, as far as our channel goes, is that this guy could be watching this right now.
He could be.
Yeah. So it's
we'd
it's
like very, to talk to him.
Yeah.
He probably doesn't want to talk to us.
No, but well, if he has nothing to hide, then maybe this is a way for
maybe
him to
he should, yeah.
get himself cleared. I mean, we would be a very neutral audience and you know, as far as talking with him, so he wouldn't have to worry about us you know, I don't know. We're not gonna put a strong light bulb over his head.
right.
You know, but it certainly would help what we're trying to do. He has no control over that. We're moving forward. And if he wants to clear himself, it'd be great to hear from him. So if you're watching, you can reach us through this channel.
Yeah, reach out to us. Thanks. I want to go back to the call that Adam received at 6:51 p.m. from Amanda, because something caught my attention while I was looking at the phone records. A few minutes before Amanda made that call, she made a call to a number she'd never dialed before. That call lasted 0 seconds. But then that number called her back, and that conversation lasted for 2 minutes and 23 seconds. And then, without hanging up, Amanda called Adam at 6:51. And when he picked up, he was now the third person of a conference call. The voice on the other end told him to pick her up at 7:35 p.m. But that voice wasn't Amanda's. She was already dead. I'm Gavin Fish. This is Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin.